This article is brought to you by the best-selling booksy Right Every Time, The Black Book of Eamon Blackthorne. Because the right words, at the right moment, change everything. How to recognise toxic traits in someone who's extremely good at playing the victim. The manipulation hiding behind helplessness that most people never see. In short, you can learn to recognise toxic traits in a victim player by watching patterns over time. Not single moments of distress. Genuine distress seeks resolution, toxic victim playing seeks sympathy and avoidance of accountability. The pattern becomes clear when you notice what happens after you offer help or hold a boundary. You can name the behaviour without attacking the person, and you must do it clearly. Definition: toxic traits recognition in the context of victim playing is the ability to identify consistent behavioural patterns where a person uses the appearance of helplessness, suffering, or being wronged to avoid accountability, shift blame, and maintain control over others through guilt and sympathy. I watched a manager spend 8 months defending a team member nobody could challenge. Every time performance came up, the conversation collapsed. The team member would tear up, describe how hard they were trying, and mention a difficult period at home. The manager, a decent and caring person, backed off every single time. Meanwhile, the rest of the team covered that person's work, absorbed the tension, and quietly started to leave. The problem was not that the team member was dishonest. The problem was that nobody could see which parts were real and which parts had become a tool. Toxic traits in someone who plays the victim are genuinely hard to spot because they sit behind something that looks like pain. By the time you recognise the pattern, you're often already tangled in it. This article gives you a clear process for recognising what is actually happening so you can respond with both clarity and respect. Why toxic traits hidden behind victimhood are so hard to see. Sympathy is not a weakness. It is a sign that you are a functioning human being. The problem is that some people have learned, often over many years, to use your sympathy as a lever. When someone cries, you soften. When someone describes how unfair life has been to them, you want to help. When someone says they are being misunderstood, your instinct is to listen harder and speak more carefully. These are healthy responses. They become a liability only when the other person has learned to trigger them on demand. Victim playing as a toxic trait is effective precisely because it mirrors genuine distress so closely. The tears can be real. The history of difficulty can be real. What changes is the function instead of processing pain and seeking resolution. The person uses the appearance of suffering to avoid consequences, deflect criticism, and keep others walking on eggshells. And because you cannot easily distinguish the two, you are on the side of compassion. Every time. This is why toxic traits recognition in this specific pattern requires something most people skip: a process for watching behaviour over time, not just responding to individual moments. What you need to have clear before you start looking. Before you begin observing this pattern in someone, you need two things in place. The first is a baseline of the facts. What specifically happened? Who was involved? What was said or not said? What the outcome was? Not the emotional atmosphere, the facts. If you cannot write down a clear sequence of events, you're not ready to assess a pattern. The second is your own honesty about your role. If you've been avoiding this conversation for months, part of what you're dealing with is your own discomfort. That does not mean the other person is innocent. It means you need to be clear about where their behaviour ends and your avoidance begins. Without that clarity, you will second-guess yourself every step of the way. Once those two things are in place, you are ready to watch properly. How to spot the pattern. A step-by-step process. Step 1. Watch what happens when you offer a real solution. This is the single most reliable indicator. When someone is genuinely distressed, they want the problem solved. They may need time to process, but eventually the offer of help is welcome. When someone is using victim playing as a toxic pattern, real solutions are a threat. Solving the problem removes the leverage, so when you offer a practical way forward, the person deflects, minimises the solution, raises a new grievance, or escalates the emotional distress. Try this next time the person describes a problem they are suffering from. Offer one specific and practical step they could take. Then watch closely. A genuine response engages with the suggestion. A toxic one finds a reason it will not work and pivots back to how unfair things have been. Step 2. Track the pattern of who bears responsibility. In healthy working relationships, responsibility moves around. Sometimes you get it wrong. Sometimes the other person does. both are acknowledged. In victim playing, responsibility only ever flows in one direction away from the person and towards everyone else. Over time, you will notice that every conflict involves someone else's failure. Every setback has an external cause, and every criticism is evidence of being persecuted rather than being given feedback. Keep a simple log, not a dossier, just a few dated notes of specific incidents and how responsibility was attributed. This is not about building a case. It is about giving yourself the objective grounding to trust what you're observing. If you find yourself thinking, "Am I imagining this?" the log answers that question. Step 3. Notice what happens to your accountability when you hold a boundary. One of the clearest signals of toxic victim traits is what happens the moment you decline to absorb their framing. When you say, "I understand this is hard, but I am not going to change my decision," a person in genuine distress may be upset that they will eventually accept the boundary. A toxic victim player will redirect the situation so that your boundary becomes the act of cruelty. Suddenly, the conversation is not about the original issue. It is about how you have failed them, how typical this is, how you are just like everyone else who has let them down. You will feel the pull to apologize for something you did not do wrong. This is not an accident. It is a well-practiced move. Recognizing it as a move, rather than a moral accusation, is one of the most important steps in this whole process. The people I have seen struggle most with this are exactly the ones with the strongest sense of fairness, because the accusation lands on something real, their genuine desire to be good to others. If you're finding it hard to hold a position without being flooded with guilt, read about how to use I statements in team conversations to prevent synergy breaking blame cycles. The tools there apply directly here. Step 4. Listen for selective memory and moving goalposts. Toxic traits in a victim player almost always include a particular relationship with the past. Previous agreements are forgotten. Commitments they made disappear from the record. Moments where they caused harm are framed as responses to provocation. At the same time, any moment where they were on the receiving end of something is preserved in precise detail and brought out regularly. This is not random. It is a curated version of events designed to maintain the identity of someone who suffers and endures. When you notice this pattern, do not argue about the past. You will not win that argument, and it will exhaust you. Instead, redirect firmly to the present. I hear that you experienced it that way. What I need to talk about is what happens going forward. Step 5. Separate the emotion from the behavior. This is where most people go wrong. They see the emotion and respond to it, rather than seeing the behavior it is attached to. The emotion may be genuine. The behavior attached to it may still be harmful. You can hold both at once. You can say, "Sincerely, I believe you have had a difficult time," and also say, "Clearly, the way you handled last Tuesday's meeting is not acceptable." These two things are not contradictions. Practice saying them in this order. Acknowledge what you believe about their experience, then name the specific behavior you observed, then state what needs to change. Keep the script simple. "I know this period has been hard for you. What I need to address is that when Marcus raised the deadline issue, he told the rest of the team it was his fault when we had agreed it was a shared responsibility. That cannot happen again." For more on how to structure these kinds of conversations without triggering defensiveness, the scripts for addressing team members who are undermining group synergy offer practical language you can adapt directly. Step 6. Test whether they can acknowledge any part of the problem. A genuine person, even one who has suffered genuinely, can usually acknowledge some part of their own role in a difficult situation. It may take time, it may be imperfect, but the capacity is there. Someone with deeply rooted toxic victim traits will be unable to do this without deflecting. Every partial acknowledgement will carry a, but that transfers the real responsibility back outward. "Yes, I was late with the report, but nobody told me the deadline had moved. Yes, I raised my voice, but they provoked me." You are not looking for perfection. You are looking for the capacity to hold a small piece of accountability without immediately unloading it. If that capacity is simply not there, across multiple attempts and multiple conversations, you are dealing with a pattern that requires something beyond goodwill and patience. Step 7. Assess the function, not just the form. Here is the truth of it. What separates genuine distress from toxic victim behavior is not how intense the emotion looks. It is what the emotion does in the relationship. Ask yourself, does this person's expressed suffering consistently result in others taking on extra work, backing down from reasonable requests, or accepting blame for things they did not do? If the answer is yes, and if this happens repeatedly, the suffering is functioning as a control mechanism, regardless of whether it is consciously deployed. This is not a judgment of the person's interior life. It is an observation of the effect their behavior has in the room. And it is the only basis on which you can act, because you cannot verify what is happening inside someone. You can only respond to what you observe. Understanding how passive-aggressive behavior silently erodes team dynamics is worth your time here, because victim playing and passive aggression often travel together in the same person. Adapting the process for remote and hybrid teams. In a room, you can read a great deal from how someone carries themselves. Remotely, most of that disappears. Toxic victim traits do not disappear, they adapt. The pattern shows up differently on a video call or in a message thread, and you need to adjust how you observe it. Watch for asymmetric communication, long messages describing their difficulties, brief responses to yours. Watch for problems that only emerge on camera, when there is an audience. Watch for selective memory in writing, where previous agreements in a thread are not acknowledged. The biggest risk in remote settings is that the absence of physical presence makes you more generous in your interpretations. You cannot see the eye roll or the dismissive body language, so you assume it was not there. This is exactly where the log I described in step 2 becomes essential. In remote teams, write things down. Pattern recognition requires data, and your memory is less reliable without the physical anchors of shared space. For teams navigating conflict in distributed settings, understanding how a neutral problem statement can stop conflict before it escalates is worth applying alongside the process above. A quick note before we continue. Most people leave the hardest conversations for last and regret the words they used when they finally had them. The best-selling book Say It Right Every Time gives you 115 tested scripts for those exact moments, the ones that shape careers, relationships, and how people remember you. Get your copy at emonblackthorne.com. Now, back to the article. What people get wrong when they try to address this. The mistake. They confront the victimhood narrative instead of the behavior. Why it happens? It feels dishonest to ignore what looks like emotional distress when addressing what caused the problem. What to do instead? Address only what you can observe. When X happened, why was the result? I need Z to change. Leave the suffering narrative alone. The mistake. They over-explain their reasoning, trying to prevent the person from feeling attacked. Why it happens? They anticipate the guilt induction move and try to preempt it with excessive justification. What to do instead? Say what you need to say, once, clearly. Repeat it calmly if challenged. Do not negotiate with distress. The mistake. They bring the conversation up in a group setting hoping the team's presence will provide support. Why it happens? They are conflict avoidant and hope the group dynamic will do some of the work. What to do instead? Always have this conversation one-on-one first. A victim player in front of an audience will perform for the room. That conversation will not go anywhere useful. For thinking about how group isolation develops, look at scripts for telling a team member their behavior is isolating them from the group. The mistake. They wait for the right moment, and the moment never comes. Why it happens? Every potential moment to raise it carries some emotional risk, so they delay. What to do instead? Recognize that you are caught in a rehearsal trap. The right moment is the next appropriate private conversation. Prepare your opening sentence and use it. A practical checklist for toxic traits recognition. Use this before you decide how to act. A single yes is worth noting. Four or more yes answers across multiple incidents means you're observing a pattern, not a bad day. Number one, when I offer a practical solution, does the person deflect it and return to describing the injustice instead? Number two, in every conflict I can recall, does responsibility land on other people and never on this person? Number three, when I hold a boundary, does the conversation shift so that my boundary becomes the act of harm? Number four, does this person's version of the past consistently erase their own contributions to problems? Number five, does their expressed suffering reliably result in other people absorbing extra work or dropping accountability? Number six, when I ask them to acknowledge their part, does every acknowledgement carry a redirection that unloads the real responsibility elsewhere? Number seven, does being around this person regularly leave me questioning my own judgment, even when I know the facts? If the pattern is showing up clearly, also consider whether your team's stress response is amplifying the dynamic. The amygdala hijack in high-pressure moments is a real factor, and a victim player knows, consciously or not, how to trigger it. What you can do with this now. After decades of watching people navigate genuinely difficult personalities, the ones who come through it with their clarity and tact share one habit. They trust what they observe over time more than they trust what they feel in the moment. Feelings are real and important, but they are not a reliable compass when someone has spent years learning exactly how to produce them in others. Toxic traits recognition is not about becoming cold. It is about developing the strength to hold two things at once: genuine compassion for a person's history and clear accountability for the behavior in front of you. Those two things do not cancel each other out. In fact, the most respectful thing you can do for someone whose toxic traits are costing them relationships and trust is to name the pattern clearly, without cruelty and without apology. That is the ground worth standing on, not the storm of someone else's manufactured distress. Frequently asked questions. What are toxic traits in a victim player? Toxic traits in a victim player are patterns of behavior that use the appearance of helplessness to avoid accountability, shift blame, and control others through guilt. The person rarely acknowledges their own role in conflict and consistently frames themselves as wronged, regardless of the facts. How do you recognize toxic traits disguised as vulnerability? You recognize toxic traits disguised as vulnerability by watching what happens when you offer solutions. A genuinely distressed person welcomes help. Someone using victim playing as a toxic pattern deflects solutions, escalates their distress when challenged, or redirects attention back to who wronged them. Why is toxic traits recognition so difficult with victim players? Toxic traits recognition is difficult because victim playing triggers your instinct to protect and support. Calling out the behavior feels cruel, even when the pattern is clearly manipulative. The person has often refined this behavior over years, making it look completely natural and convincing. What is the difference between a real victim and someone using toxic victim playing? A real victim seeks resolution. Someone using victim playing as a toxic trait seeks sympathy, escape from consequences, or control over others. The key difference is what they do when help arrives. Genuine distress responds to support. Manipulative distress escalates it or refuses resolution. How do you respond to someone using toxic victim traits at work? Address the specific behavior, not the emotion. Say what you observed, what it cost the team, and what you need to change. Do not engage with a suffering narrative directly. Stay factual, stay calm, and refuse to accept responsibility for problems the other person created. Can someone with toxic victim traits change? Some people develop victim playing as a survival habit and can change with honest feedback and consistent boundaries. Others have built an identity around it and resist change entirely. You cannot force the shift. What you can control is whether you keep absorbing the cost of their behavior. Thank you for listening. If this article helped, the best-selling book Say It Right Every Time will take you the rest of the way. 115 scripts ready to use whenever you need them. Visit emonblackthorne.com to get your copy.